Thank you that you all are here, and thank you for this invitation to your university. It's a great pleasure to speak here and to have discussions with you and with my colleague Hui Hui. Yeah, as he already said, this will be a lecture about Kant, and it is the trial to applicate Kant's ideas to contemporary European arts. So I try to ask myself if this is a theory that we could work with still after Marcel Duchamp's ready-mades and Marcel Duchamp's large glass. I try to give you a lecture in in a very slow way so that you can follow me, and I hope that you have the paper as well and can, maybe it's not the same, but can read a bit. So, and don't hesitate if there's any problem in understanding, just to give me a sign if I should slow down a bit, okay? Well, in the Critique of Judgment, Kant develops four aspects of the reference of aesthetic judgment. And with these so-called moments, Kant distinguishes aesthetic judgments from other kinds of judgments, like those relating to knowledge or morality. But the moments, as well as their limiting effects, are results of a theoretical investigation providing the claims of our everyday judgments. Also, it is supposed to be possible to use these moments in defining what art is, or better, should be. This, and how it works, is however not obvious at all. First, these moments are answers to the question whether the claim that others should agree to our aesthetical judgment can be legitimated. And second, they prove if there are any common criteria for judging aesthetics. And last, they try to show that art is an autonomous while aesthetic way of presenting ideas. The characteristics of the aesthetic judgment formulated by Kant's critical theory come about within a transcendental investigation and concern only the reference of a certain kind of judgment. To be sure, Kant's theory of aesthetic judgment leads to merely formal constraints and may therefore be called formal itself. But it is this very formality that enables art to be concerned with any subject matter and any material whatever, even with the question regarding to its own nature. Professor Hui Hui said to me that he gave a course about contemporary arts and contemporary art philosophy. So maybe you've heard about Arthur Danto, and this is the question Arthur Danto is addressing to aesthetic theories. He says a theory about aesthetics must be able to raise the question, what is the nature of art itself, and what is the nature of an aesthetic theory itself? So it must be self-referential. Well, nevertheless, I think that from this formal structure, several criteria may be derived, at least indirectly, not only with respect to the process of judging, but also to the objects in question. The content of these aesthetical criteria is made up of the very conditions of aesthetic communication. As an investigation into the specific logic of aesthetic judgment, first of all, the method must be capable of being applied to judging any specific kind of art. And second, as a logical structure, it should not hinder art from engaging with political and social concerns as long as this structure is realized. Following from these two criteria, any aesthetic pretending to be Kantian not only holds off from formulating properties with regard to contents, but also leaves the results of this kind of theory open to a future development by any new artwork or style. It can be named normative in the sense that it would always remind art production as well as reception on the constitutive conceptual border that is beyond our intentional grasp. However, the validity of these statements depends, as I'm going to argue in the following, on the interpretation of two concepts of Kant's theory, the concept of form and that of the play of the faculties. My understanding of these concepts may not be Kantian in the strictest sense, but it follows Kant insofar as it accepts that art must find autonomous figuration in its presentation. Kant calls it Darstellung, that nevertheless are figurations of communicability. In the sense once formulated by Luhmann, who is a German sociologist, and who said, art communicates through works of art. So it's not a communication about works of art, it is a communication through works of art. And for this, for sure, this means understanding art as a certain kind of sign. A phraseology used by Marcel Duchamp, whose work and whose concept of painting of precision I shall try to explain in Kantian terms so as to give the latter a pragmatic dimension. Okay, my swift to Duchamp may astonish you, maybe because it is Duchamp who forces in many interviews and in his statements that the most important thing to avoid in art is aesthetic and aesthetic pleasure. His large glass, I quote, is not supposed to be seen only with eyes, he says, and he often expresses his aversion against so-called retinal painters concerned only with pure sense impressions. He refuses an art pleasing only the eyes, and therefore combines his work of art with a short poetic text. These literal attachments comprise some cryptic, absurd, and pseudo-scientific notes collected in the various so-called boxes. So you see the white box on the right side. And the right box, is a kind of, well, you can say commentary to the large glass. It tells stories, and these stories are even not consistent with each other. But it's a kind of poetic text, as I just mentioned. Well, Duchamp's idea was the two moments, the glass and the boxes should work together and above all shall hinder his work of art for adopting an aesthetic quality in the sense of aesthetic pleasure. While refusing aesthetic pleasure, Duchamp's work seems to produce evidence in contra to Kant and to demonstrate the limit rather than the validity of Kant's aesthetics. But the aesthetic quality or form Duchamp wants to avoid is the sort the Kantian aesthetic rejects as well. The first moment of the analytic demands that one should judge without interest, especially no moral interest in the beautiful is allowed and no interest in the pleasure effect of the beautiful. The pleasant differs from the aesthetic form. The latter has nothing to do with emotional effects, nor does it correspond to a private end or a subjective will. The aesthetic form is not primarily meant to make us feel happy, even if de facto this may be at times be the case. Therefore, it is not supposed to give rise to an immediate desire, Kant says, unmittelbare Lust or lust. Instead of this, it is accompanied, if we follow Kant, by a special desire resulting from a process of reflection. But even this process of reflection is not the same as that of an intellectual, theoretical reflection. Rather, it is a special kind as it relates to something sensuous, produces a sensory result, and also reaches awareness through the senses. This is precisely the standpoint of Duchamp when he states that taste, by which he means subjective taste, isn't important. He pleads for a certain, what he calls, beauty of indifference. And this means at first that we shouldn't take subjective personal interest in the sensible and pleasant qualities of the beautiful work of art. On the other hand, he wants to save art from conceptualization, just as Kant did. Both of them deny the solely intellectual treatment of art and the interference of knowledge which leads to concept of the object represented in the work of art. Duchamp complains that we always start to translate everything into words and concepts, and that we integrate our concepts while we grave for meaning. So whatever we perceive is, as he says, unfortunately, gets a meaning. Unfortunately, because we normally handle our perceptions as a tool and as an instrument. The work of art treated like this, in this way, then functions only as a gateway to knowledge and recognition. To take art in this intellectual way makes it a bare illustration of thought. But when Duchamp links his work with a text, he uses a poetic text. He plays with words, he uses language like color, as he states, and via this way he tries to produce a poetic effect or of a special kind. When we sum up both the merely pleasant and the primarily intellectual aspect of a work of art shouldn't be taken into account in the first place. For Duchamp, looking at a work of art these ways would be a reduction which is strictly to be avoided. The challenge to the artist as well as to the spectator, however, is to regard the science of art as a special kind of science which corresponds to a process of reflection. That's why it is, like Duchamp says, the spectator who makes the pictures, just like the artist does in the role of a spectator of his own too. What Duchamp calls art and what Kant calls aesthetic form is produced in a process of reflection. So they both are products of a creation and not results of a receiving certain qualities or conceptualized forms. Now Kant explains and legitimates this process of creation as the interaction of two moments. First, the individual composition of the colors and structures which ends in the object of perception. This is what Kant names the given form. And second, the active process of interpretation, better, of aesthetic reflection about this given form. Only with this twofold process, something we perceive gains an aesthetic value or qualifies as a sign with an aesthetic meaning. Kant specifies this process of being concerned with a form in an aesthetic sense as the harmonious play of the faculties, imagination and understanding. These two aspects of the process belong to two different theoretical levels. The perception of an individual appearance, which is called given form, and aesthetic reflection, which produces the aesthetic dimension or meaning of this form. So the given form is a kind of abstraction itself, because in Kant's view, an empirical form is not given in any way. Their being given is itself result of an activity of the subject, and the activity is a sort of an implementation guided by the so-called transcendental laws. Of this very form, we can gain consciousness when we reflect on our perceiving. It is a misreading and misunderstanding to insinuate that Kant thought of qualities like colors or tones as not being relevant to the aesthetic reflection. This misreading results from a confusion of the mathematical law-defined form, our shape, with the individual form, which is the individual composition of color and tone, the given form. The sensuous quality of appearance, not its intellectual meaning, nor its emotional effects on the person who judges, is the material starting point of the aesthetic reflection. Intellectual meaning and emotional effects shouldn't be mixed in with the individuality of an appearance. For instance, if we want to know what a perception represents, we must identify its universal structures. That is, we have to transform or to schematize the individual form into a general and therefore cognitive form. This transformation of an individual form results in a conceptual and therefore general meaning. So normally in our everyday life, we must use the present perception to come to knowledge by interpreting it as a sign or as an object that is given in reality. But we are logically, not psychologically, free to ascribe another meaning to a perception. We do this, for instance, by judging under the law of knowledge or morality. The aesthetic meaning is a special type of intercourse with the world, too. The type which is characterized by the pleasure of reflection while we create the aesthetic form and therefore to ourselves as creating the object. Therefore, the aesthetic form Kant is talking about is not the given form in the sense of the functional or significant form. It is just the individual form of a perceived object in contrast with the general form that serves for knowledge. By the way, the cognitive form and the forms most painters or artists try to overcome in their artwork. They hinder the recipient from taking the product as a means for knowledge. They want him or her to refuse the control of the concept and distinguish between the work of art and reality. To compare art and reality is the first step to a humiliation of art and demotes art for illustration or imitation. It is the cognitive universal form an artist is fighting against because this form drives his individual form back into the cliché and the sketch. So it is not a strange quirk of the isolated Königsberger philosopher to deny the dominance of cognitive form in art. It is rather a necessary condition to get rid of the stereotypical ways of connecting visual images with intellectual meanings. That is why Paul Klee, for instance, a German painter, is talking about when he says that the concept is a tempter and has the disastrous effect leading away from the individual painting. And it is That is what Cézanne complains about when he speaks of the mania for concepts, the Begriffsversessenheit. He works hard to free the classic cliché objects like apples and women. Painting the Mont-Saint Victoire in a lot of different atmospheres was one exercise to get rid of concepts. Concept-guided arts reception and to draw the attention to the individual, sensible form, to what we see with our eyes. So maybe I make a short break here and give you the opportunity to ask some questions if you are not quite sure about the first part. So I try to these three paintings of Cézanne. You can see as it's not a theory, it's just the work of an artist who in some way refers to Kant, even explicit, and implicit in trying to lead our attention to the individual perception, to the individual painting, because the subject, the Mozambique Trois,